Hello, my name's Chuck Banning. I'm the sports editor here at The Day. And it's a fun time of year for us, especially with March Madness beginning later in the week. And we're fortunate on our staff to have two of the most experienced reporters in Connecticut covering the UConn men's and women's team. Gavin is the veteran of the men's beat. He's in his 30th season. And Vicky's been covering the UConn women, and you could probably tell me how many years, but I know it's on the plus 20 side, correct?
Yeah, off and on.
You know, this is obviously a really unique, March Madness. There was none last year, when the men were, hoping to make a run in their final year in the ACC tournament to maybe get into the NCAA tournament, and the women certainly were going to be a threat to win it all. Before the plug was pulled on everything because of COVID. And this year it's going to be unique again because the two tournaments are going to be staged virtually in one site. The men in the Indianapolis region and the women in the San Antonio, Texas region. So it's going to create some unique situations. And Gavin and Vicky are going to be covering the two events. Gavin's leaving tomorrow for Indianapolis, and Vicky will be leaving soon for San Antonio for the tournament. So I'm going to ask both of them a little bit about to try to explain to maybe viewers that follow basketball but aren't really understanding of how the tournament's going to be set up this year, to maybe to explain to people just how things are going to run in their particular regions. So Gavin, since you're going to be first up, the men play Saturday at 8:00, and they're actually not in Indianapolis. They're playing at Purdue University, which is in West Lafayette, Indiana. Maybe you can explain kind of how UConn's going about getting out there and just how the tournament is going to be running in that region.
Well, their game's at 7:10 Saturday, and it's at Purdue University. Now, that's about an hour and 15 minutes outside of Indianapolis, where the majority of games will be played. So UConn's group is out there. They arrived in Indiana yesterday, Monday, and I was speaking to Tom Moore, the assistant coach, this morning, and they're in quarantine right now. So they're all on the same floor of a hotel room. They're getting their meals brought to them. They did a test when they got there yesterday. They do another test this morning, and then if the second test comes out all right, they think they're going to be able to practice tonight on Tuesday night. So they're hopeful that they can start getting together, but that's what they had to do. All the teams have to go through a protocol once they get out there. And then it's just, they keep them in their bubbles. It's Coach Hurley kind of compared it to when they went to the Mohegan Sun, obviously earlier this year on a smaller scale at the Sun. But when they went there, they had the little Bubbleville, and they had a bunch of games at the Sun, and UConn played USC there. So it's something they've been through. It's been a difficult year for all the kids and players to be so isolated. But I think when you get to the NCAA tournament, they don't mind it as much.
Now, Vicky, obviously the women's story took a strange twist yesterday when it was announced that, Gino Auriemma, their head coach, had tested positive to COVID-19. Fortunately, he's shown no symptoms, but he's not going to be able to travel with the team. They're leaving today for San Antonio, and the earliest he could join them would be March 24th. Unfortunately for him and them, that means that potentially he would miss their first two games in the tournament. So maybe you can talk just how that's going to change their dynamics as they head out. Now, I know they've also, like the men, had the Bubbleville experience at Mohegan Sun most recently with the Big East tournament. But maybe you can kind of fill us in on, what their plans are going to be going forward to Texas without their head coach.
Yeah, the Bubbleville, they just did last week at the Big East tournament at Mohegan Sun. And so the kids were saying yesterday was the selection Monday. They found out who they were going to play and everything. The kids were saying that, they had just been through it at Mohegan Sun, and that Kristen Williams was saying that they have a good time together. There's seven freshmen on the team, so they have a good time together, whatever they're doing. And she said that they think they can carry that over, to San Antonio. She said they played Uno with the security guard on their floor at Mohegan Sun. She said whenever they're together, they find something to do. So, Gino getting COVID, that was unexpected yesterday. The teams have been testing every single day this whole season. And to get to this point and and he tests all of a sudden Sunday morning, he tested positive. Actually, he said he had two tests. One was positive and one was negative. And then yesterday he had a follow-up that was positive. And so the team had to, like the team medical personnel went back and watched film of practice to see like how close he was to the kids and if any of them were in danger. And they deemed that he hadn't had any really close contact with the kids. And also the amount of virus that he has in his system is so small that even his wife is negative. And like the kids have been getting tested every single day and none of them have shown any signs of it. So the rest of the travel party is all okay. The thing about the situation now is that, so Chris Daly has been his assistant coach since the day he got hired at UConn. This is his 36th season and it's her 36th season. So they're like brother and sister, like they have little arguments and stuff over silly things, but she's, you know, been in the loop for 36 years. So some of the kids said that she actually runs a tougher practice than he does because she's a perfectionist. They said CD is a perfectionist, but they said they have so much respect for her. And Avina Westbrook was saying whatever CD calls, we'll just have to get it done, you know, and then Gino will be able to join them for the Sweet 16 if they make it that far. And he said he was available on the Selection Monday show last night. He said he's just grateful that the rest of the team still gets to go. He said that, you know, the kids are sad that they're not all going to be traveling together. He said that they're like a bunch of traveling gypsies, that they all like to be together. So the kids were sad that he wasn't going to be there, but they, you know, they don't really miss too much of a beat with Chris in charge, I would think.
Gavin, you the men, you know, fortunately or unfortunately, had been through a couple of, you know, shutdown situations during the season. I would imagine, you know, everybody's a little bit on edge, especially when you saw what happened during a couple of the conference tournaments, you know, last weekend, you know, where Kansas was forced out, Duke was forced out, Virginia was forced out because of COVID situations. You know, it's kind of, you know, some of it is in their control, obviously the testing aspect, but, you know, some of it's out of their control. Do you find, you know, between, you know, Dan Hurley and the players, it is kind of a juggling act to try to keep that stuff in the back of your mind and just focus on playing basketball? Or is that really not an issue at this point?
I think at this point, you know, they've kind of gotten used to it. Yeah. I mean, they don't want to dwell on, you know, what could happen. They want to focus on getting ready for each game they play. So I think they've done a good job dealing with that. But as we find out with the virus, that, you know, people like Gino and in some instances UConn, that you can do all the right thing with the UConn men earlier this year, you can do all the right things and still get a positive test. So yeah, it's always hanging over their heads a little bit, but I think it's more of a routine now. You know, you get to the NCAA tournament, you're so excited. They're going to do the right thing because it means so much for them to be there. So I think it's more in the back of their minds now.
Vicky, you know, the UConn women, obviously, you know, they're just, you know, they've been a staple in this tournament. You know, I know, you know, they haven't won it in a few years, but they've been to the Final Four, and they're the number one team in the country right now, and certainly one of the favorites to win this tournament. But they're a little bit different this year because of their youth. I mean, and I don't know if that's a concern for them going into this tournament, or is that a positive, the fact that they just are just kind of, you know, young kids and just go play and not worry about it?
Yeah, that's what someone asked Gino that last night. He said ignorance is bliss. Hopefully we have enough bliss to last us for six games, he said. Paige Beckers was also saying, you know, at this point of the season, they try not to be freshmen. You know, obviously they are in age, but they have two in the starting lineup. And with Paige, and Paige Beckers is a National Player of the Year candidate as a freshman. So it's not like she's like this little wide-eyed, you know, person. And Nika Mule is also in the starting lineup. And then a third one was the sixth man of the year in the Big East, Aaliyah Edwards. So they have a lot of talent. They're still like kind of on the goofy side sometimes, freshmen, but when they get on the court, they know how to flipped the switch, it seems like.
And the men, Gavin, obviously it was a big deal for them to get back after, I believe, 5 years since they last appeared in the NCAA tournament. I know, like I said, we mentioned they thought they had a run in them in the AAC tournament, and that never materialized last year. But they've really come on strong, in the latter part of the season and really cemented themselves and took themselves off the bubble. And, there really was more anticipation to see, where they were going to be seated and who they were going to play, as opposed to, are we going to make the tournament this year? But that said, I saw the video that they supplied, the media, and there was just tremendous excitement and enthusiasm to hear their name called nonetheless.
Yeah, it was great talking to James Bouknight and Tyler Polly after the selection show. I mean, they were almost giddy, both of them. I mean, Tyler is a senior. He's worked his whole career. He's gone through so much, a coaching change. He had a knee injury from last year that kept him out for a while. He missed most of about the second half of last year. And he's come back from that. And James Bouknight is only a sophomore, but he was over the moon. He was talking about how there's a dream come true, how hard they work. And, he was so happy. It was kind of in contrast to how he felt after the Creighton game. He didn't have a great game. He was, struggling, and he went back to his room that night and he sat in the dark and he turned his phone off. He was really beating himself up. And, because, they wanted to win a Big East tournament title so badly, but now they got the second life here, but that experience is going to really help them. But yeah, they were just, it's great to hear it. When a team hasn't gone in a while, because it's you see the enthusiasm, the excitement, you just hope they channel it the right way once they get into the tournament.
And again, Vicky, we talked about being old hat for UConn for the women, but again, it's still an exciting experience. We don't know much about their first round opponent, High Point, but looking ahead in the bracket, there are some potential fun games down the road. They could play Syracuse, an old Big East rival, in the second round. Possibly Iowa, who has another freshman sensation in the Sweet 16, and not to look too far ahead, but they could potentially play Baylor, the Big 12 champion, a recent national champion, and a big rival in the Elite Eight. I know Gino doesn't like to look too far ahead, but I'm sure that he took notice of some of the potential teams in their bracket. Maybe you can talk a little bit about that. I don't know how much we know about High Point at this point, but certainly other teams in the bracket are a little bit more familiar.
They've been to 12 straight Final Fours, which is a NCAA record. Obviously, there was no tournament last year, so they keep that streak intact, whether they would have made it last year or not. But the thing about this team is there's only three kids on the team who have ever played in an NCAA tournament. The three junior tri-captains, Kristen Williams and Olivia Nelson Adoda, played in an NCAA tournament as freshmen for UConn, and Avina Westbrook played for Tennessee 2 years ago in the tournament before she transferred to UConn. But the whole rest of the team has never played in one, the seven freshmen and two sophomores. Yeah, he was High Point is the Big South champion. They're making their first NCAA tournament appearance ever, so they're very excited. They're one of four teams in the tournament to be making their debut, so they're really happy. Gino was talking last night about Syracuse and South Dakota State, how that those are tough opponents right off the bat, right in the second round, potential second round opponents. He said I wouldn't want to play them at home with 20,000 people, and they only bring five players. He said they're probably a little bit of an exaggeration, but they're always tough teams. When they used to be in the Big East with Syracuse, they were always a tough team. That's an interesting matchup. And then Tennessee is in their bracket also. Baylor is the number two seed, and they were supposed to play Baylor earlier this year, and the game got canceled because of COVID. And they did play Tennessee, and they won by a very narrow margin against Tennessee. And then Kentucky is the four seed. And then, Iowa has a freshman, Caitlin Clark, who is leading the country in scoring. So everybody's been comparing her with Paige Beckers all year, Caitlin and Paige. Caitlin is obviously very talented too. She averages almost 27 points a game. So yeah, there's a lot of good teams in the bracket.
Gavin, the men, you know, I think there was some speculation that they originally might be in that 8-9 seed range. When they finished as strong as they did, I think people thought maybe they could possibly end up as high as 6. They ended up settling in a 7 spot and are going to obviously play a team, Maryland, the 10 seed, you know, comes from arguably the best and certainly the most deepest conference in the country, the Big Ten, which placed 9 teams in the tournament, including a pair of number one seeds in Illinois and Michigan. I'm sure they're going to have their hands full with this team. I know they've kind of been erratic during the season, but they've had some really quality wins. So maybe you can give us a little, you know, scouting report on Maryland and how UConn matches up in that particular game. And as you mentioned, it's Saturday night at 7:10 p.m. and the game is going to be on CBS.
Yeah, Maryland went 16-13 this year and 9-11, and yes, the very best conference in the country for college basketball this year. And so it's kind of hard to tell. They're very inconsistent. They won at Wisconsin and Illinois, 2 great wins against nationally ranked teams, and they've had some other losses, you know, Penn State and Northwestern. And so the league is so deep that the 16-13 record, they're obviously probably better than that record given the competition they played, but they don't score a lot. They average about 69 points a game and they give up about 65, have 3 guys in double figures. They have the Big Ten Defensive Player of the Year. So they've come a long way. They had a really rough patch. They won their first 4 games and then dropped like 5 out of the next 7. So they kind of recovered from that and they finished pretty strong, but they did lose to Michigan, obviously another great team in the conference tournament. And they lost at Northwestern and Penn State finishing before in the regular season. So they've been really up and down, but they're going to be a tough out because they played such good competition. I mean, UConn hasn't played that quality competition that Maryland has played. So I think, UConn's going to have to play a high level game to beat them because Maryland's been in those battles. UConn played Villanova and Creighton twice, well, 3 times counting the tournament. So they haven't played ranked teams, those 4 teams, and they lost all 4 of those games against ranked teams. UConn's best win was they beat USC at the Mohegan Sun in December, and USC's an NCAA tournament team and a very good team. So the quality of competition that Maryland has played, I think they're better than a 16-13 record.
Vicky, as far as the UConn women, I there was never any doubt that they weren't going to be a number one seed. Can you explain to listeners a little bit how regions are select, how they select the top 4, and then how they kind of end up regionalizing teams as best they can? I know this year it's unique, obviously, because the whole tournament's being played in virtually one site. But I know in years past they've tried to keep it a little bit regionalized to help with traveling a little bit, limit traveling. Did you see any of that in this bracket this year? Or are they, because it's all going to be in one place, just try to, give each bracket the most balance they could?
The women's tournament committee did a conference call last night where you could call and ask them questions. I didn't go on it, but I read the transcript and they said that they just did it. They didn't do it geographically this year. They just did it according to seed with they call it the S curve, 1 versus 64, 2 versus 63. Like they tried to keep it as true to the seeds as possible. They have a couple rules, say Marquette made it from the Big East as well as UConn. They wouldn't put UConn and Marquette like in the same, half of the bracket. They wouldn't meet until the regional final. Like they try to do that with conference teams and put the conference teams in separate brackets so that they don't end up playing each other again after they just played twice. But they said they kept it pretty true to form. I guess Stanford was the number 1 overall seed, They played an amazing schedule this year. They played a lot of the top teams on the West, like all out on the West Coast, Oregon, and Stanford, because California had a rule that you weren't allowed to congregate, basically. In California, there was a complete shutdown. They went on the road for like a month and a half. I forget exactly how many games it was, but they just went barnstorming all over the place. They went to Arizona. They stayed in hotels for like a month and a half, played most of their season on the road. They're just really battle tested. So they were the top overall seed, and then UConn, and then NC State was the ACC champion, which is such a great conference. So
I should say, you mentioned that UConn is playing High Point. That game is actually Sunday night at 8 o'clock on ESPN, and they're actually playing it in the Alamo Dome, which maybe you can really quickly explain. Apparently, they have two courts in the Alamo Dome because it is a football stadium, and they're going to be playing two games, I don't know if at a time, but they'll be able to play, two games at certain times during the day there.
Yeah. There's other sites like the men, in the first couple rounds, they're sending some of the teams to the University of Texas, which is about an hour away in Austin. But then in the later rounds, all the games are going to be at the Alamo Dome. But yeah, they put UConn, they call it the South Court, I guess. UConn's at the Alamo Dome for their first game at 8 o'clock Sunday on ESPN.
Good. Gavin, I did notice that Georgetown is in UConn's bracket, another Big East team, but they couldn't meet till a little bit further down the road. And they have similar issues to the women in terms of teams with big conferences trying to, keep them away from each other as much as possible. So maybe you can just, talk a little bit about the bracket UConn's in, if you could. And then when you're done with that, I wanted to ask you a little bit about, Dan Hurley, who you've written about many times about his 3-year plan when he was hired as UConn's coach, and how in year three, he's been able to get UConn to where he wanted to, which is back in the NCAA tournament. But maybe talk about their bracket a little bit, and then let everybody fill everybody in about Dan's process to rebuild the program.
UConn, they're in a position right now. They're not looking too far down the road, obviously. And, like UConn women, they've done pretty well over the years in the first couple rounds. So I mean, it's I don't think they looked at the entire bracket that much as maybe in past years. Years ago when they were really good, they would look down the road. Oh, we could potentially play this team and that team. I mean, UConn, if they win, they're going to play the winner of Alabama and Iona. I mean, Alabama, I saw their conference tournament championship game. They're a terrific team, super athletic. They play up tempo. I mean, that would be a very difficult matchup for UConn. The number one seed in the bracket is Michigan, but they'd have to get far down the road before they played Michigan. So I think in their case that they're more focused on just getting through the first round. You want to get, it'd be a big accomplishment if they got through the first won two games and moved on. You want to get through that first weekend. And I think that's what they're focused on. As far as Dan goes, Dan Hurley's done a tremendous job. What I get a kick out of is that he's kind of all along, with his rebuilding plan, which he went to Wagner and turned that program around, went to Rhode Island. His first year, they're 8-21. Then he ended up taking them to two NCAA tournaments before he came to UConn. And he's had this plan, and he just tells you, this is where we should be at this point in year one, or this is where we, after games last year, you'd say year two, game five, we're going to have these excruciating losses, And so he's got this plan. He's stuck to it. It's a proven formula for him. Todd Moore was talking this morning, how intense and how focused he is on his plan. And he's all about building relationships. The players are really bought in. That's another part of his plan. So when he got to UConn, the first goal was to make him more competitive. And he did that. And then it was, and get the kids to buy in to the culture. And then he wanted to make them, learn how to win. And towards the end of last year, where they finished strong, they really learned how to win tight games. They were losing so many tight games in the beginning. And now they've kind of to the point where now they're in the NCAA tournament. So he's taken them just where he said he was going to take them. I mean, and he's where they should be. He's built good recruiting classes up over the last couple of years. He's got another terrific one coming in. So he's built depth in the team. He's building talent in the team, and they should be good for years to come. I mean, you don't want to look too far ahead, but they've got some terrific young players. I mean, James Bouknight will probably move on. He could be a lottery pick. We'll see what happens after this year with him, but they've got some great kids coming in behind him. Sonogo's been just an unbelievable find for them. The big kid up front, beginning of the year, he was basically lost. Hurley would say that. He was lost because, you know, with all the shutdowns and everything, the freshmen really got hurt as far as development. So freshmen like Sonogo and Andre Jackson taking longer to develop because they missed time. They missed time during pauses to develop. So, and now Sonogo was on the All Big East tournament team by the end of the year. And he said like four straight double figure scoring games for the first time. And he's going to be a terrific player going forward. So he's done basically exactly what he said he's going to do, right down step by step. And that's really been, he's done an incredible job.
And conversely, Vicky, certainly Gino has nothing to prove. He's won 11 national championships. He's a Hall of Fame coach already. But I think, you know, it's something I've taken away from this season and through your stories and, you know, video and everything else we see. It's actually been a fun year for him because his team's been so young. They've kind of, tapped his own fountain of youth, it seems like. And, you know, I know he's talked about how they've been a pain in the neck at times, but you could tell he's thoroughly enjoyed this year. For different reasons than in year past, and I think he thinks that's one of the reasons why this team's will stay loose once they start the tournament.
He said after the Big East Championship, when they won the Big East Championship at Mohegan, they were all doing snow angels and the confetti and everything like that, and he just really enjoyed watching them celebrate. He said that they reinvigorated the whole entire staff, and he was talking about. He's like, first of all, one of the freshmen nicknamed him Big G, so Rebecca Lobo tweeted one day. She's like, I played for him a long time ago, and I don't think I could still get away with calling him Big G. She's like, what the heck? Gino said to somebody yesterday that it was like being on his slow pitch softball team when he was 27 or something. Like, he's like, how do they get away with calling me Big G? But he was saying at the Big East tournament how he's like, some days Nika Mule will be looking at him and he'll be like, what? And it makes him feel like he's doing something wrong. Like they're just, and they'll be like, oh, nothing. They have brought out the kid in him. But he said, he always says they don't listen. So he said they have short memories. So when they make a mistake, they can, move past it. But they also have short memories because they never remember anything he tells them. But yeah, they're a fun group. It's weird. We haven't met them in person yet. We talk to them on Zoom all the time.
Well, and that's what's kind of made this this whole tournament unique from the get-go. I mean, the whole season, really, even from a media standpoint. We're fortunate to have you two on the beat. Again, your experience and your own enthusiasm through a tough time is to be commended. I think our readers are lucky to be able to see your bylines virtually every day through this whole run. And I just like to remind them that, you know, you both will be, attending the tournament and to make sure, you buy the paper or read online, follow you on Twitter. And also you can go on to theday.com and to subscribe to a newsletter we're going to do exclusively for our readers, it's going to be called Husky Headquarters. And, everything that we write will be included in there. We'll be updating it periodically throughout the tournament. And we'll also be able to grab videos virtually, of course, through some of the Zoom press conferences everybody, will be, holding throughout the tournament. So you're going to get to travel, which is nice. We haven't been able to do a lot of that lately. I know, it's going to be unique because there's not going to be a lot of going on and you're not going to be able to have, personal contact with the coaches and the players out there, but, you're going to be out there and that's the most important thing. So before we let you go, maybe each of you can just let our readers know what your Twitter handles are so they can give you a follow if they don't already.
Mine's @GavinKeefe. You know, I post stuff regularly. Anytime there's a Zoom press conference, like today, this afternoon, we have one with Coach Hurley at 1 o'clock, and I'll be posting updates. So yeah, definitely check it out.
I'm at Vicky at the day, and it's not the at sign, like the regular at Vicky and then AT at the day. Because whenever you call somebody on the phone to talk to them, you always say, hi, this is Vicky at the day.
Well, safe travels. You know, enjoy the tournament. It should be interesting. And we look forward to I look forward to editing, number one. But I'm sure our readers are going to look forward to, you know, everything you put forth in the next couple of weeks. Thanks and safe travels.